Think about that song for just a second. Think about the implication of it, the meaning of it, and the sense of it. The joy of the Lord is my strength. What would that look like? What would that look like on you and me from the standpoint of our life, from the standpoint of our confidence, from the standpoint of our happiness, from the standpoint of the way we walk each day in this life, of our relationship with Christ and our relationship with one another? What would it be like if that song were our song? I'm going to give you a shameless promotion for our lesson tonight. And I will tell you what we're going to do. It all started with a question from Jane. When are you going to tell another story? She likes it when I tell stories. She likes it when I take the Bible and I take an event or I take something that's happened in the Bible or tie things together in the Bible and present it in a story-like form. And so she asked me that earlier in the week, and I couldn't get that off my mind, and so I started looking for a story. And looking for the story, for some reason, brought me to Luke chapter 7. And so our lessons this morning are Luke chapter 7, part 1, and Luke chapter 7, part 2. If you receive the outlines, no doubt when you received the lesson outline for tonight, you thought, well, what is this? Because it's not much of an outline. I didn't intend for it to be. The lesson for tonight is going to be three stories. A story of a woman, a story of Jesus, and a story of a man. And then the story, it's actually four, and then the story that Jesus tells. And so what have they got to do with this song, Joy? Let me just give you this hint. When we understand the story of the woman, that song is her song. The joy of the Lord. That song is hers. But it can be just as easily mine. So how did it get to be hers? And what prevents it from being mine? So that raised a question. How do you get to the end of Luke chapter 7? What is Luke doing to bring us to the end of Luke chapter 7? And that brings us to taking a look at all of the book of Luke. But you start by going backwards, or at least I did. Because you look at chapter 7 at the end and you think, okay, what's at the beginning? And when you look at the beginning of Luke chapter 7, you think, what brings us to this? And you look at the end of Luke chapter 6. And when you look at the end of Luke chapter 6, you think, what has brought us to this? And you go to Luke chapter 1. So you tell the story of Luke and you come down to Luke chapter 7. So let me reverse it. Let me take us from the beginning and let's go to Luke 7. And let's take a look at what is told us as we go through Okay. I think David used it last, and I was going to accuse him of breaking it, but now I don't. It may just be batteries. Okay, we ready? We start in Luke chapter 1. We go from chapter 1 through chapter 2 in verse 40. And there we have the stories of the birth of John the Baptizer and the birth of Jesus, where God is saying, something's coming, pay attention. And he says it like he never has before. Where there is a man who is a priest and his wife, both of whom are of old age and too old to have children. And an angel appears to him. And something remarkable happens to him to get everybody's attention. He can't speak anymore. And he's not able to speak anymore until this miraculous baby child is born. And there's discussion about his name, and he says his name will be John. He doesn't really say it, he writes it. And after he's written it, then he's able to speak. And then there is the birth of Jesus, a baby born to a virgin. A baby born to a woman who had never been with a man. And God is getting our attention. And he's saying there's something here to pay attention to. And then we are introduced, the only one that does it, to a remarkable event when this child is only 12 years old. And he is talking in the temple with the leaders of the law. The individuals who know the law better than anyone else in all of Judea. And he is amazing them with his understanding. And with his questions. And with his answers. And everybody who sees it, paying attention to it, says, what kind of child is this? It's the same thing they said 12 years ago when he was born and when his cousin John was also born. It was the same thing they said then. Something is happening and God is getting attention. Then in chapter 3, starting with 1 through 20, we have John's preaching. And the thing about John's preaching is not everybody listens. And Jesus will bring attention to that later on. Because there are some that paid no attention to what John was saying, but there are some that did. And those that did would be the ones that you wouldn't expect to have paid attention, because in their life, it didn't look like they had ever paid any attention to God. But the ones that weren't paying attention were the ones that you would have expected to pay attention. Because they were the ones who presented themselves as the religious people, the religious leaders. But as it turns out, they weren't listening. And that begins to get the key point of where we're heading. Because it's all about listening. I heard a man one time say, he kind of summed up listening in a way that I thought was good. And I try to remember it a lot. He says, you either get it or you don't. You're either listening or you're not. But listening means so much more than hearing the words. Listening means comprehending and understanding. And these guys weren't listening. And then we have the story of Jesus' baptism by John. And then we have Luke's account of Jesus' family history, which may very well be the history of Mary's side of the family, with Matthew giving us Joseph's side of the family. But we have Jesus' baptism and the history of his family so that there won't be any questions with regard to the remarkable things that are about to be revealed about this child who's become this man. And then in the next part, we have Jesus being tempted in chapter 4, verses 1 through 13. Tempted in all points like us, but totally devoted to God. The one for whom this song that we sang would have been the story of his life. God is my joy. God is my hope. God is my strength. And it becomes his song. It is his song before it's ever the lady's song. And it's his song before it's ever ours. And so we have the story of his temptation. And then he begins his public ministry. Very brief statement said with regard to Luke, with regard to the early ministry of Jesus. What I want you to do is turn in your Bibles back to chapter 4. And I want you to notice, if you start in verse 14, you come down through verse 18. I read that really it's in verses 14 and 15, just those first two verses. The ministry of Jesus that takes place early on is given in just those two verses. He went everywhere preaching and he was performing miracles. And the people were listening to him wherever he went. And his message and who he was and the story about him was told all over the place, and he was drawing crowds. But Luke's intent is not so much to give us a chronological order of things as it is to tie things together. And he's tying things together for us. Because where he really starts with Jesus' ministry is in Jesus' hometown, in the city of Nazareth, at the synagogue where he grew up. At his hometown synagogue, at the place where he grew up as a boy, to all the people that knew him. And he goes to that synagogue and he takes the role of the book of Isaiah. And he finds the place where these words are written. And in front of his hometown people, he reads these words. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim release to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to set free those who are oppressed, to proclaim the favorable year of the Lord. And he gives the roll back to the attendant and he sets down. And every eye in the synagogue is upon him. Every eye in the synagogue is watching him, wondering. And then he says this. This is talking about me. Today, this verse has been fulfilled in your very sight. And they were amazed. And they looked on him with wonder. And they were amazed at him and the great things that were coming out of his mouth. Until he said, what he knew was wrong at the heart of every person in that synagogue. And what he knew was wrong with the heart of every person who claimed to be God's people. Because they had a hatred for anybody who disagreed with them. They had a hatred for anyone who wasn't like them. They had a hatred for anyone who was not of their nation. And so Jesus then reminds them. There were a lot of lepers in the Old Testament, but there wasn't any of them healed except a man who was a Gentile. There were a lot of widows starving to death in the land of Israel in the days of the prophet, but not a single one of them was fed like this woman who was a Gentile. And the message cut them to the heart. And a moment ago, this man that they were looking upon with adoration and wonder, now they hated and they wanted to kill him. And so they took him out to the cliff to throw him over. And he walks out of their midst. And he walks away. Because the joy of the Lord is not their song. The joy of God is not their song. Why not? What's wrong? What's the problem? The rest of chapter 4, starting in chapter 5, we have his teaching and his healing. No content really is given yet, but he goes about teaching and he goes about healing. Then in chapter 6, verse 20 through 49, we have his Sermon on the Mount. And we have the content that is given to us of his teaching. But where I want you to focus with me is in verses 46 through 49. Because in verses 46 through verse 49, he says this, I'm telling you the truth. Every person who comes to me and listens to my words and he acts on them. He doesn't just listen to them, but he lets them cause him to become who he is. In other words, they become the principles that he lives by. And he acts on those words. Jesus says, let me illustrate to you what that's like. Let me illustrate to you what that person is like. It's like an individual who goes out and he builds a house. And he builds a house on a foundation that's made of solid rock. And no matter what storms come against that house, it will never fall because of the foundation upon which it's laid. But let me tell you the story of the person who hears my words, but he doesn't put them into action. They don't change his mind. They don't change his life. They don't change his thoughts. They have no impact on him from the standpoint of the way he lives and who he is. That person is like an individual who builds his house on sand, and the winds come, and the rains pour, and they beat against that house and it falls. And it totally falls. And it is totally and completely destroyed. This is about listening. And the last thing that he says before chapter 7 is about listening. And the absolute necessity of it. Now look at what happens in chapter 7. Chapter 7, starting with verse 1 and reading through verse 10, we're introduced to a man who completely understands listening. He has a servant that needs to be cured or he's going to die. He is at the point of death. He hears about Jesus, and according to Luke, he sends some Jewish friends of his to get Jesus to bring him to the house. And then he sends another messenger out telling Jesus that he's not worthy for him to come to his house, but just to speak the word. Just say the word and my servant will be healed. Because he understands what it means to give commandments. He understands what it means to be a person in authority. And he understands what it means to obey commandments and instructions. And he knows who Jesus is. And he knows about his authority. And he knows about his power. And he knows that all he's got to do is just say the word. And his servant would be healed. He understands listening. He understands the importance and the necessity of following the instructions of the one who is in command. He understands that fully. Jesus will say about him, I tell you the truth, I've never seen such great faith. Not in all of Israel have I seen a man of such great faith. Because he understands listening. That's the key. That's the whole point. And then, verses 11 through 17. He's on his way and going through the city of Nain. Nain is south of Nazareth, south of the Sea of Galilee. As a matter of fact, it's a border town, sitting right on the border of Galilee and Samaria. And he comes to the gate, and all indications are that it's not a walled city. It's a city that's built up the side of a mountain that's there. And all that anyone can figure out is that the gate must have been the gate between two houses as you start to head up that mountain into that village. And he comes to that gate, and he sees a widow, a woman whose child has died, and it's her only child. And she's also a widow already, left with no one else. There's a crowd following Jesus, and there's a crowd following the woman. But none of those are the reasons for what happens next. What happens next is because Jesus saw this woman and understood her plight. And he had compassion for her. He felt sorry for her. And he walks over to those who are carrying the body. And they stop. And he touches the body and he says, young man, get up. And the young man gets up. And Jesus gives him back to his mother. I can't tell you the times when I've been left alone with the casket. Prayed that prayer. And asked God for that friend to come back. For that loved one to come back. And one day they will. But the power of the man who says, young man, get up. And the young man gets up. And he presented the boy back to his mother. And all the crowd was amazed. We have seen great things today. We have seen unbelievable things today. God is among his people and he is doing good things for them. But you know what's important to remember about this? We hope the woman listened. We hope the young boy listened. But the woman getting her boy back is no substitute for her listening. And the woman getting her boy back is no reason for her to sing the song if she stops listening or if she never listens. The necessity of listening. Jesus even tells the story that in the last day there will be people who will say, Lord, you walked through our streets. We saw you and touched you when you visited our town. You healed us. And I will say to them, I never knew you. Depart from me. You folks who never listened. You folks who never paid attention. The importance and the necessity of listening. The next one is about John the Baptist, who sends some disciples to Jesus to ask him, are you the one that's coming or do we look for somebody else? How does that tie in? You already know. At that time, Jesus was healing. And he tells the disciples of John, go back and tell John what you're seeing. The blind receive their sight. The lame walk. Dead are returned to life. And the poor have the good news preached to them. And what Jesus is quoting is Psalm 61. The same psalm he read at his hometown synagogue. And he's also quoting, I meant Isaiah. Isaiah 61, which is the same passage he quoted when he read to his people at his synagogue in the city of Nazareth. But he also adds to it Isaiah 35. And he tells him, you go back and tell John what you see. But what he's really telling them to do is go back and remind John of Isaiah. Because you see, the person of faith, all they really need is to be reminded of what God said. All they really need to do is listen to what God said. And when they listen to what God says and they put their trust in it, the joy of the Lord becomes their song. The joy of the Lord is who they are. Is the joy of the Lord your song? Have you been washed in His blood? Do you need to respond to His invitation this morning? If you do, we invite you to come as together we stand and as we sing.